You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flack from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with the under-16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Oslo.
Hi everyone, and you're very welcome to Series 2, Episode 13 of Cawley's Call, and I'm delighted that you can be with us again this week. Thanks all, as always, for the feedback on the Sean Williams interview last week in the show. Sean, he came across really, really well, and as I say, we're grateful for all the feedback. We've another eventful show lined up for you tonight, and obviously there was a lot going on at the weekend in terms of the results that we're going to get to. Shamrock Rovers losing, I think it's good for the league. We all think it's good for the league. They won't be happy with us saying that, but as I say, it is good. St. Patrick's Athletic winning and Sligo Rovers winning. And there's a round of fixtures tonight, which we're going to preview also. So lots happening domestically at the moment. But before we get into all that, I'm delighted to say a good friend of mine, a long-standing friend, takes me right back to the days when I started in the league. And this was one of my teammates, and as I say, he's a friend ever since. He's the best goalkeeper that I ever played with, and I've said that many times, and it's on record as saying it, so I'm not giving him a big head by saying that, even though he loves to hear it. But I'm absolutely delighted to say that joining us tonight is Mr. Barry Ryan. Barry, how are you?
How's it going, Al? Nice to hear you.
You love hearing my voice, don't you?
I love hearing your voice. Yeah, every time I can hear it, I switch you on.
What's the crack? How are you?
Not much now, to be honest. Not much. Just living day by day, to be honest. Kids and work.
You retired back in 2014. I suppose, how has retirement been? And do you miss the football?
Retirement's been, well, it's been strange because I had to go out into the big bad world and get a job. Mm.
And you wouldn't work a day in your life, you.
No, I did a few Nixers up and down, but grafting for me back in the day, it was a no-go. Like, I was comfortable with the football. Do I miss the football? Not one bit.
Really, yeah?
To be honest. Not one bit.
Okay, and what is it that you don't miss about it?
I did my time, and I had the guts of 20 years, like, so I done my time.
To be fair, you did have the guts of 20 years, a brilliant career. Even looking back on it today, as I said, I would have started out with you, but looking back on it today... 435 appearances, Barry. I didn't realise there was that many. That's a lot.
That is quite a few, yeah. I was lucky enough through injuries, and I didn't get that many injuries in that. Mm. And majority of the clubs I was in, I was kind of playing. So I kind of racked up a bit of the appearances, all right.
Just going through the clubs, we will get to obviously three or four of them that you did play with, but it all started with UCD. You had 6 years there. That's where I came across you first. How do you look back on your time at UCD, Barry? Sometimes people suggest UCD, the narrative around them is, should they be in the league and all this kind of stuff in terms of what they offer fan-wise or maybe facilities or the ground. But if you were to go through the amount of players that have come through UCD that have played in the league and what UCD have contributed, I think they're a good value to be in the league. Obviously, I would say that because that's where I started as well. But certainly from your own point of view, you started out your career there. So how do you view your time at UCD?
They have every right to be there. If most of the clubs in the league had their facilities, the league would be in a better place because their facilities are top class. They look after their players on the campus, so they don't want for anything. So I think there's a lot of clubs that could be jealous of UCD, to be honest.
And I suppose your time there, Barry, it would have started off with... Who signed you in the first? Did you come through the scholarship system?
Doc, Tony O'Neill, yeah. Spotted me and offered me a scholarship, yeah.
But you'd done no study and you just played football?
I was supposed to study, but you know yourself.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You'd done no study from
exactly,
me and
yeah,
you.
Exactly.
Yeah, you'd done no study.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I came across you when the great man was in charge, Mr. Paul Doolan. And Doolo would have been tough on people, but I loved him. He signed me, and as I say, I loved him. You got on quite well with Doolo, but... Your memories of him, Barry, looking back on it, did you enjoy playing under Doolo, or did you find that he might have been a bit difficult?
No, I got on well with Doolan, Paul Doolan, to be honest. He was tough. He was a tough character, but I think I needed that. Mm. He took no nonsense. Like, if you weren't performing, he'd tell you to your face. Mm. If you were performing, he'd put an arm on your shoulder. But I think I got on very well with Dooley, yeah.
I was the same, and I love that. I think that's what people found difficult, that he was so honest and straightforward, and as you says, he would have told you, but you were the type of character that could deal with that. Do you think, Barry, like, that was a long time ago, you're going back 20 years, do you think that has changed in the game now? Because you look at lads now, and I don't think it's as straightforward in terms of people criticising people straight to your face as it was back then for us, maybe.
The times have definitely changed. Even coming towards the end of my career, like, I wasn't one for holding back. If I wanted to say something, that I said it. And I did offend a few players, and I don't apologise for that, because if I didn't think they were pulling their weight, I'd have told them. And if I wasn't pulling my weight, I'd expect them to tell me. That's just the way I was brought into the game.
Mm.
But it's definitely, definitely changed over the years. Players are a lot softer now.
And do you think
they're mollycoddled too much?
That was my next question, because we've said this here on the podcast, myself and Stewie, many times. And I know it's different times in terms of society as well, but is it gone too far, Barry? Is it too soft now?
I think it is too soft, and it's just going to get worse and worse as the years go on. They have everything nowadays. Like, I never had a goalkeeping coach till I went to UCD.
Mm.
I was never coached ever. Like, nowadays they have goalkeeper coaches from the age of 8 up. They have everything on tap.
Mm.
When they go to League of Ireland, then they have everything laid on from with physios. I never seen a physio's head till I was about 25.
So
I didn't need to.
So before you went to UCD and you had a coach, was it just a case of coaching yourself or teaching yourself out in the street or wherever with a local schoolboy team?
Just out in the street, yeah. There was a few lads, my first club, Shockley Celtic, they put a jumper down that and a rock. That was my goal, and they kicked balls at me. That was it. That's the most coaching I ever got.
Were they kicking balls at you or throwing rocks at you?
Yeah, a bit of balls. They're setting rocks back at them as well. But that was it. Like, I just grew up, I was put in goal, and I was just to save shots, and that's what I did. I don't know. I wasn't coached till I went to UCD.
I might write a new song about you, Barry, actually, because, like, the game that we love, a song I would have talked about would have been kind of playing on the road. Like, sounds like you went to, like, some sort of GBH, to be quite honest.
Yeah. Lamp posts and jumpers were goals, and out in the streets. That was it. That was my upbringing.
But that was the thing, Barry, and it was all for all our upbringing, and I think that builds resilience and it builds character, as you say, and it puts you in good stead then for, obviously, when you did go to UCD in the career that you have. That's the worry I have now with the young lads coming through. Like, you very rarely see a young fella kicking ball out in the street now. It's so structured in terms of kids playing with a local team and the go set training times. But away from that, you rarely see young fellas out belting ball off the street.
No, kids are overcoached nowadays. Everyone's a coach. Everyone has a badge. Everyone is an FUFB, grassroots. Lads that have never kicked a football in their life have learned football through a screen, like through a laptop. I think that is ruining the game.
Mm.
Kids play soccer through PlayStation. Mm. They're not out in the street anymore kicking ball. 5-a-side, 2v2, 1-on-1. It doesn't happen anymore.
It's
very sad to see.
It is, yeah. I agree. And did you ever think, Bar, of going down the coaching road yourself, or is that something when you finished up, it was never on the radar?
I did my UFAB a long time ago, goalkeeping.
Mm.
But to progress, you have to go through the UFAB outfield to go onto the UFAA goalkeeping. Like, it's a money racket, if I'm being honest.
Okay.
I've no interest in coaching outfield players. I'm a goalkeeper. That's the position I know. I don't want to get my UFAB. I understand the game.
Mm.
I played the game. A lot of coaches out there, as I said, have got badges through a laptop and formations and this and that and transition, all these words. And I just don't, it doesn't sit well in my head. I think you kind of, it's need to play the game at some sort of level to understand it.
It's like bringing me back to the days in the dressing room where you were giving out stink about everyone. Will you relax?
Yeah.
I have
before
we get on, Bar, I have to bring up the story with, obviously, as I said, I love Paul Doolan, and we had great times when Doolo was there. But there was one particular one, and Doolo, for anyone that's listening that doesn't know Paul Doolan, he was one of the best managers, coaches we had in the league here, an unbelievable player, but he was very driven and intense and all those kind of things that you would want to be as well. But at UCD, some lads just couldn't deal with that. But so I'll never forget the day, Barry, he came into the dressing room one morning on a Saturday. We used to do a warm down, and on a Saturday morning, So we went round and we had a meeting. This is the truth show, right? Went round and had a meeting and we're all standing around and he says, lads, I'm going to ask you a question now, right? In his accent. And he says, I want you to be honest with me. So that was grand. He goes round all the lads. He says, on a weekend, maybe after a match on a Friday and maybe a Saturday, how many pints would you have over the weekend, right? So players being players, trying to look after themselves and being a bit cautious and a bit coy or whatever. So goes round them all and a couple of them said, I may have a couple of pints on a Friday, Paul, and I could have a glass of wine with a meal on a Saturday, or I might have two or three pints, right? So we round them
all. UCD college.
Yeah, and they were all
glass of wine with meal.
All the answers were varied. So, but all the lads were like two or three, one, four. No one said any more than that, right?
No fat frogs.
Comes to Barry, right? Barry straight out. Well, to be honest with you, Paul, I'd probably have about six after the match on Friday night and I'd have a good 12 on Saturday. His face dropped, Dulo. But there was nothing he could do because Barry was obviously the number one keeper, the best keeper we had. He just had to suck it up and get on with it, move on to the next fella. But we did have good times, to be fair, Barry. We had great times.
We did. He asked us to be honest, and I was honest. I wasn't going to lie to the man. So that never really changed for my career. I always liked to drink after a game. I wouldn't be able to sleep.
And that was one of the main reasons too, wasn't it, that you did, because you'd struggle to sleep after a game.
I'd be up to 3 o'clock in the morning if I'm not saying that I needed a drink now, that I didn't, I relied on it, like, but I'd be staring at the ceiling. I wouldn't let the adrenaline still be pumping and that. So I'd have a few cans, sit down and watch the telly and just chill out, like. That was my way of chilling out.
But then you'd have 12 pints on a Saturday.
And then I'd top up then on the Saturday. Like, why? I was a young lad up in Dublin.
But, well, it never affected your performances anyway. I'll give you that much. But
my 21st, we were brought in to train on a Sunday morning. Mm. And then I think they got wind. It was my 21st. So I was down home for my 21st on the Friday. As you know, I had a fair bit. Mm-hmm. And Saturday, I had a fair bit. And I had to get the train or the bus back up Sunday morning for training at 10 o'clock. I wasn't in the best of shape, to be honest. But they kind of knew this, so they just put me in the centre circle in the middle and put everyone around me and just had to drill and balls at me. And I was just kind of going, oh my God, okay, I get the point, I get the message. So I'd say about half an hour just drilling balls at me.
So after
I had a good weekend.
After the 6 years at UCD, Barry, obviously you were beginning to make a name for yourself and other clubs, the bigger clubs then, as they generally do around the league, come searching around Belfield and looking for the best UCD players. But of course your name was being bandied around everywhere. So the move to Shamrock Rovers after UCD, how big of a move was that for you at the time?
It was massive. They're a massive club. Mm. Going from UCD to Shamrock Rovers is an eye opener, to be honest. Even the players wise, like, they were all old pros. They were around the league for years, like, so just to be in the same dressing room was a bit daunting. But look, we all know what happened. But it was exciting times.
And at that time as well, Barry, because we all know you're a laid back character as well. But would you, I suppose, inside, I knew you from inside the dressing room, and you would have been very driven when we played, and you would have wanted to win, and come the game Friday night, you were always very determined and vocal and all that sort of stuff in terms of the game and wanting to win. So did you have aspirations at the time, maybe that the move to Shamrock Rovers was going to take you to bigger and better things?
Oh yeah, obviously, like, you're moving to Rovers, you're moving there to win leagues and cups and get to Europe and that, like, that was the main goal. Mm. There, as I said, they were a massive club, a huge club compared to UCD. But I off the pitch I enjoyed myself, but once training and that, I never took the piss. Like, I trained hard, and game time I focused, and I was, once the game was on, that was me. I was in the game, I was in the zone.
Yeah,
after that then I'd be able to switch off, like.
And I can vouch for that. As I say, I know we're having a laugh and a joke, but come the game time or training, I don't think I ever seen you miss a training session or anything like that. But I suppose the move to Shams, Barry, then we all know what happened, and of course it led to, I suppose, well, I want you to tell me. It was a tough time in your career. Do you look back on it now and have your regrets, or how do you view it now? I suppose, I know it's been a long time ago, it's 15, 16 years ago, but Do you view it with regrets, or any reflection that you've made on it, how you feel about it now?
It was a very tough time, to be honest.
one of the toughest times, Mike, to be honest, because I didn't tell my parents. I got a phone call. I wasn't replying to their messages, their phone calls. I was just basically stuck. I was in a bedsit at the time. I didn't even own a suit to go to the appeal. That's how on my own I was, like. So it was a very, very, very hard time. Reporters knocking in my house in Clare, and I was in Dublin, reading it in the paper that a League of Ireland player has been caught tested, getting text messages. It was a hard time, a very hard time.
And in terms of your mum and dad at the time, because obviously I would have known your family as well, Barry, was there a particular reason why you didn't want to tell them?
Just to say, just let them down.
Yeah.
I was in Dublin on my own, and I'd let them down, basically. Let my family down, my friends down. I just didn't want to face it. I thought it might just go away, but as we know, it didn't.
And eventually then, when was the time you did come to maybe have that conversation with your mum and dad?
I had to, the calls kept coming and the texts. They were going to arrive up in Dublin if I didn't answer the phone, basically. So I made that phone call, and they took us. They didn't lose the rag over the phone. They took it, right, we'll get through this, we'll deal with this. And yeah, we just kind of dealt with it from there.
Can you remember, Barry, well, even the testing process, what led up to it? Were you nervous about it, like, or was it just...
I was a bit nervous, yeah, because okay. I think we were playing the Friday. I got tested. We were playing the Friday, and I was out on the Wednesday evening. I don't know why I was out on the Wednesday evening. I never really did that, but it was just this night. I don't know, did someone spot me out and word got around? I don't know. But I was tested on the Friday in Richmond after the game.
Okay. And obviously, did you have that feeling in your stomach that there could be something wrong here?
I had that feeling came along because I wasn't hearing anything back. And the other player that got tested as well had got a letter, and I had got nothing. And I was kind of going, right, something's not right here. Like, so I just waited, and then I got the phone call to say you'd failed the test. So
you spoke there, Barry, about being on your own during that time. How were the club during that time? Like, was there support coming from them, or do you feel as though...
Absolutely nothing. I got sacked in the paper, I think. I didn't even get a phone call.
Okay. That's not good.
I was just left. I was just like, there you go. In fairness, the doctor is the Irish doctor now.
Alan Byrne.
Alan Byrne. He was brilliant.
Not
he came with me
that.
In that, but he was the only fella I contacted, really. No contact from him whatsoever. But Alan Byrne was amazing to me.
And the manager at the time, was there a phone call made or what's happening?
Ian Buckley was the manager. I don't think I had a phone call, no, to be honest. I could be wrong, I could be stand corrected now, but off the top of my head, I don't think I had any contact.
So Barry, there's a lot of, like, I know you well now, and I suppose... Looking back on that, it's changed times now in terms of there's a lot more focus on people's mental health and how people are and reaching out and speaking to people, and it's every corner you turn now, and it's brilliant, the support that people have. Do you think things could have been handled a lot differently, and I suppose the support you would have got yourself, had there been more like that around back in those days?
Back in the day, I suppose that's the way they dealt with it. Just kind of washed their hands, good luck, bye-bye. But you couldn't do that to a player nowadays. It's too public, there's too social media and that and stuff. You couldn't just treat a player like that. The way it was dealt with, as I said, I didn't even own a suit. I was in a bedsit. I was in this flat in Balls Bridge. I was living with this fella, I don't know, was he a stockbroker? I'd never seen him. He was never there. But I had to go into his room and get a suit. Borrow a suit. I never told him. And put the suit on and go to the hearing.
Wow.
It was like... crazy times.
And were you fearing the worst, Barry, in terms of, I suppose, people were, the likes of those things, there's rumours about, will it be 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, whatever the case may be. Were you fearing the worst in terms of what they were going to do, the sanction?
Yeah, right. I knew when the positive test came back, I was going to be hammered because it was the first player league of, I knew I was going to be made a guinea pig. Take an example of this lad here now.
Was there support from the PFEI at the time?
Fran was there as well, yeah, Stephen. I think Stephen involved. But definitely Fran Gavin was there. Like, they were with me through the whole process.
Yeah. And Fran supported you through all that as the...
Yeah, he was there through the whole process, yeah.
Mm. So was there ever times, I suppose, after that then, Barry, you spoke about being on your own and the shame you might have felt with your family, but then you eventually got through it. But when you were hit with the 9-month ban, was there ever a thought in your head that this is it, I've had enough, I can't go back, I don't want to face this or whatever?
There would have been thoughts like that, yeah, when I moved back home. Like, people would be staring at you in the... It was all over the press. It was everywhere. People would be looking at you in the streets down here in my hometown. Like, as I said, that a reporter followed me down to my mother's salon, asking for, trying to get something out of me. Like, just when you're out as well, people would be staring at you, passing comments, all this kind of thing. But majority of the people in Ennis and Clare were brilliant to me. Like, they stood beside me.
And you need that local support as well, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Even over my local, all my dad's friends, God rest him, all them, they never batted an eyelid. Like, I was still Barry, like, I wasn't tarnished or anything like that. Like, so
the funny thing about it, it's interesting you say to me that obviously it's a natural reaction maybe to feel shame, but your mum and dad, that you felt it towards that. But I know, I knew your mum and dad, and I would have been out with them, and all they probably would have wanted to do was support you.
Yeah, and they did.
Yeah.
To be fair to them, they did. They didn't turn their back on me. They didn't. They were there for me 100%. I know it hurt them. I know it hurt them deep down, but they didn't show that.
But that's what I mean. Isn't it crazy, yeah, Barry, that your natural reaction is to think you don't want to speak to them, you don't talk to them, but yet, if anyone's going to help you, it's going to be them.
That was it. I'd say, as I said earlier on, it was about 3 weeks I didn't answer anything. I didn't contact them or text them or ring them or not, and then they kind of knew there was something up. So, but that was my reaction at the time. I just did not want to deal with it. I just wanted it to go away, but obviously it didn't.
Well, it did go away in terms of, as I said, you got back playing, Barry, you went to Dublin City, and I suppose the best years then were to follow at St. Pat's, because it was certainly redemption for you back then. And to be fair, I would have played against you then in the league, and you would have taken a lot of stick. I would have been at matches where you would have taken a lot of stick. Did you ever struggle with that side of it, or were you just happy the fact that you were back playing and you were putting it in the past?
I made a positive out of all the stick. It never bothered me. I'd have the banter back with fans. Cork City fans, Bowes fans, Rovers fans. I got it in taxis. I remember confronting a group of Bowes lads outside Dalymount one night. They were driving past me in the car after a match, and I had my gear bag. I was walking down the road, and next thing the window went down, and they started roaring abuse at me. So me being me, dropped the gear bag and chased the car down the road and drew a boot at the car and banged on the window. I goes, roll down the window, say what you just said to me now. And the three lads just looked out at me as if to say, what is this guy? What's going on here? Like, they weren't expecting me to do that. They were just looking like rabbits in the headlights, and they didn't open their mouths to put up the window and just drove off. But that was me. I just confronted them straight up and they just drove off.
You sure you got the right car?
I did, yeah. Well, most definitely got the right car, because I followed it down the road. It never left my side.
I think that's allowed. I'd allow that.
Yeah, but when I confronted them, they said nothing. Yeah. They were like 3 mice inside the car looking out and going, what do we do here, boys?
Well, that's
I'm trying to think, what's the modern equivalent of doing that on Twitter now? Is there a way?
Yeah.
That's what they do now. They abuse you on Twitter behind a faceless profile. Yeah, this shite, you know.
Years,
they've probably done it because they were in a car thinking to get away. They're like them fellas out of...
Thinking to get away, yeah.
What's that funny, what's the programme? Bus Wankers, and you know that programme? What's the name of that programme?
The In-Betweeners,
and they're abusing people going down the road, and next thing they get stuck at traffic lights and the fellas come down.
Yeah.
I've had visions of that cop in Terminator 2, you know, where he's chasing after the car. You know, the big metal arms come out.
But no, look, I know, Barry, yeah, as I say, it was a tough time around then, but it's the fact that you got back at Pat's, and you had a really good side of Pat's then. Johnny Mack would have been in charge. Do you feel as though then, because there was the European stuff and the Hurt the Berlin game, do you feel that time, Barry, that team that you had, you underachieved?
Massively. We had a serious squad there. If you go back over the players, like, they were like Jason Gavin, he was a quality player. Gary Dempsey, Joe and Doe, Keith Fahey, Mark Quigley, like these, I don't think you have these players in the league at the minute. At the minute. They were serious, serious players, and they knew the league, and just to train with them every day was phenomenal, like.
We've had discussions.
Was quality.
Me and Stewie have discussions about this a lot, and we don't want to sound like old fogies and looking back on our time playing. But that those years, those mid-2000s, 2005, 2008, you were at Pats. Shells were full-time Bows.
But Shells were a serious squad as well, and Bows. They were great time. The matches were intense. The players were, they were hard, good, solid players. I don't think you have that nowadays. They're all, I don't know, it's too tippy-tappy and formations and it's just not enjoyable. Even the Premiership is not enjoyable anymore.
If you were in the dressing room now, you'd be throwing boots at half-time at your own players, mind yours.
I'd be swinging off them, I would.
But I think it brings, it's a good point, because I actually agree, you know, and I think people, when they listen to like Barry say that or myself say that, we're not advocating for people to go and kick lumps out of each other.
No.
We just want to see energy and aggression, and I think supporters want to see that. I think supporters want to see this. I think this could be part of the reason why they're starting to turn back, they're back on the game a bit. They're saying there's no passion in it anymore.
Well, it's amazing. The last 2 weeks in the Premier League has probably been the only 2 weeks in the season that I've actually enjoyed watching the matches. And the reason being, the fans have been back on the ground and they're getting on people's cases and they're giving them stick and they're jeering and shouting and doing whatever. I think the players, one of the players I was watching over the weekend, I think it was Curtis Davis, was doing the punditry on the playoff games, and the playoff games are always brilliant. But as he said, and it's such a true point, fans keep the players honest. So true if you think about it.
Yeah.
The players have been getting away with murder for the last year when there's no fans there, because if you do make a mistake, no one's getting after you. The one thing we always spoke about as well, Barry, and like going back to our dressing room or even Shells, if you made a mistake or you weren't on your game, you'd have two or three fellas on top of you, never mind one.
You were balled out of it on the pitch there and then, and you couldn't hide away from it. It's either stand up to it or else just take me off and go to a club that you won't get ball of. But that's what's gone in the game. Mm. It's not there anymore.
So Barry, just in terms of, you said you felt you underachieved at Pats, the Galway years, the Limerick years, you had some good years at Limerick, and I suppose playing for them at the time, they were probably going through their own struggles in terms of trying to stay in the league and trying to create an identity down there and get as big as what they should be. They've eventually folded, and I suppose that was a tough time for you as well, and there was fallouts over money issues and all sorts. Were you getting to the stage towards the end with all that going on that you were like, look, I'm ready to pack this in? Like,
yeah, I'd had enough. I've kids in a mortgage. Like, I couldn't be waiting. Like, up in Galway, you're waiting for the gates to get your... You get an envelope after a match, like, your money. Nick the Greek was up there, sure, and he was doing all sorts. You'd be waiting for the crowd to come in to get the money to pay the players. And I was kind of going, I don't need this anymore. Like, I've my time done. I'm sick of it. Same with Limerick. There was times you were going for a away match, and you know, there was no wages in the bank today. What's going on? Oh, there was a problem. Like, and I had an argument with, I don't know, chairman, committee member outside the bus one day, and I said, where's our money? We need our money, like, we've mortgages to pay. Mm. And I nearly got sacked for that. I was pulled in for a meeting for having an argument with a committee member because they weren't paying us. Pat O'Sullivan pulled me in and said, listen, that can't happen anymore. He goes, what do you mean? We need our money. Mm. So I just had enough, but I was sick to death of it, to be honest.
And as you says, when you've kids in a family, that takes its toll on
people.
Exactly.
Yeah. You can't be going hand to mouth every week, like. Mm. And then once the season finishes, you have to try and get a job because there's no wages there, or else go on the dole. Like, it was just getting too much.
The uncertainty of it all.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, Barry, it's been eventful, as it always is, and it's great talking to you. And I do mean that. You were definitely the best that I ever played with, and one of the best in the league. I'm sure Stu, you would vouch for that as well. And regardless, I suppose, a tough time for you at Shamrock Rovers, but delighted with the fact that you did get back and playing for all those years afterwards and did have a brilliant career, 435 appearances, and people should always remember that. So it's been brilliant
People make mistakes.
And that's the thing, people do, and it's all about how you recover and get back from that. And as I said, I think the world we live in now, it might have been handled a whole lot differently to maybe you being stuck in a bedsit on your own, which I could only imagine how difficult it was.
Yeah, but sure, look, that's in the past now. I've moved on. I've got three great kids, a great wife, so, and I'm talking to you. What more do you want?
There you go. You're talking to me, your favourite. Listen, Barry, it's been a pleasure, and I'll talk to you soon. Thanks a million.
No bother. Thanks a million, lads. Cheers, boys.
Some crack, Barry Stu. Some crack. He was, and a brilliant goalkeeper. He really was at UCD, honestly. When I was just back from England, and signed with UCD. And he was mad. We mentioned it there in the interview. He was mad. But he'd go out on the pitch then, and I'd be saying to myself, I couldn't comprehend the fella that was in the dressing room to the fella on the pitch. I was saying, yeah, he's nuts. But how then when he was on the pitch, he's brilliant. And he was. Like,
he was excellent, yeah. No, he was. I've always said to myself, if I ever went down that road, I'd always get a goalkeeper. And the first thing I'd say to him or her or whatever, I'd say, crosses, comfort everything. Just comfort everything.
That was his forte.
If you do that, I'll back every mistake you make. I'm telling you to comfort everything and just be brave, and nothing worse than a goalkeeper just stays in his line doing nothing. And I would take that all day. And to be fair to him, that's exactly the kind
that
of goalkeeper
was his forte. He used to be off the line. And especially what people might not understand as well, it was different for you maybe playing in a team where you were dominating and on top in games. At UCD, you were under the cosh 90% of the time because obviously we were down fighting at the bottom or whatever. Yeah. And there was a lot of games where you were on the back foot and you're under pressure and you might be 1-1 in a game and you're hanging on to a point, or you might be the odd occasion we might have been winning. And to be fair, at UCD, we had good players and a good team and we were always competitive, but you would be on the back foot. And the thing that he was unbelievable at, any time you'd be under the cosh, we've all had those moments, the 85th, 86th minute, you're looking up at the clock thinking, oh, just blow it up, ref, or whatever, and a big high ball is coming in or there's another cross coming. He was out, and just to relieve the pressure, it was unreal, Stu. He was brilliant at that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He was very brave as well. Like, obviously, never shirked away from the tension. You know, it even sounds like he probably thrived off it a little bit as well. You know, the stick that he would have gotten from supporters.
And he wasn't the biggest. He was only 6'1", I think he was. He was only
very mobile, but and good feet as well. No, he was an excellent goalkeeper. He was, and I mean, I had actually forgotten all it. Funny enough, I had actually forgotten about
the incident
about the drugs test, and I know I'm getting the impression from Barry, I don't know how he remembers it. He probably feels people still think about it. They don't, like, you know, people move on.
They do move on. And people do make mistakes, as he said.
Absolutely, and it's a much better society now. But he also alludes to the fact about, you know, the money thing as well, which is a huge thing throughout. I mean, the money thing was a stain on our time in the game because it was a constant. It was always around. You know, it was always around. It was always very, very difficult to get away from it. And as much as you tried to push yourself forward as being a professional footballer, there was always clubs there that almost, you know, you should be happy to play for us.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, this it was
bullshit.
It was this attitude, and that attitude is still, you know, that attitude went right up through the hierarchy, right up into the association. And it was always this attitude, well, you know, aren't you lucky to be
involved,
you know, involved and that kind of stuff, like, you know. So it's taken us a long time to, we're not there yet now, but we kind of move away at least from the money woes and the financial issues. It's a lot better now.
If you compare it to...
Wasn't that long ago, Al?
No. If you compare it to a postman going doing his job and then on Friday morning his boss saying, I'm not sure if the money
would be there. This is the attitude, you know what I mean? This was the attitude. They were asking you to be a full-time professional footballer and they're turning around to you at the end of the week saying, oh, I don't really have that, but like...
We might have it next week.
As if to... Yeah.
So, but you go out and bust your balls for me tonight.
Yeah. It was never looked on as being a job. And there were other, you know, there were other things, you know, the conditions and, you know, for you know, training conditions, even, you know, players wouldn't get a meal after a game. You could be playing away to Cork or Finn Harps or whatever like that, and you'd be driving home on the bus with nothing at all, like, you know. Wasn't that long ago, but it's certainly all changed now for the better.
Okay, Stu, you got a trim. You look lovely.
I got that 2 weeks ago, you swine.
Well, I couldn't see you Friday night. We were in Talca Park Friday night, but you were dressed like the rock star.
I did that myself.
So I couldn't tell. Did you? Yeah, it's lovely.
I'm going to get a proper haircut next. I can't get into a hairdresser.
Did you enjoy Talca Park Friday night?
I did, actually, yeah.
You played well.
Yeah, and I thought Shells are very good. Funnily enough, even with Barry talking there, we need to get crowds back. I'm not just saying this because I'm harping on it, but we need to get crowds back quick because it is getting
the difference in the games in England over the weekend. It's getting to a stage
now. I'm finding it very difficult to watch games now because it's just too nice.
Brentford and Bournemouth. Brentford and Bournemouth on Saturday, first 15 minutes of the playoff game. They gave a penalty that the fans got. The fans got the penalty, not the players or the referee, because they were going bananas, right? And then 2 minutes later, Chris Meppham, the Bournemouth defender, he's back at the back, kind of dilly and dallying on the ball. Next thing, there's a fella closing him down. All the crowd are, he kind of slips. Your man nicks the ball off him, he's in, takes him down. It was a free kick, he was outside the box, he gets sent off. Just the impact that they have on the game.
But I've thought about it, like, you know, this is why we play. We play for the crowd. We do. You want to be a top footballer because you want
to showcase
to in front of a crowd. It's not, if that's not there, then I don't think you'd want to do it anymore.
Well, I think that's been the evidence in the games. Like we've said, they're like training games. And I have sympathy with the players too, I have to say. Sense that it's hard to get up every week playing in front of nobody.
Oh, completely. I just wish we can accelerate this, you know. I mean, we need to get crowds back into games.
I'm watching the golf last night, Phil Mickelson. There must have been 3,000 people walking him to the 18th green, and it was unreal. It's like a scene in a nightclub.
You can't beat it. You just can't beat it. I mean, and it's only for those moments. You know, I only ever look back in my own career, and you probably do yourself. It's just moments I remember, little memories, and it always has a crowd. There's always a crowd. There's always a noise or a shout, or a reaction.
What's your favourite memory?
Oh God, scoring against Bowes actually in the game in Daly Mount.
The one we spoke about.
Yeah,
with Kevin,
that actually did stick with me an awful lot, and there's a reason for it. I had broke my ankle in pre-season. And I was misdiagnosed, I remember we were playing Derry away, 2002. We were going for the league with Bowes at the time, and I think we drew 1-1. And I went up for a header with Kieran Martin,
you know,
and I landed first, and he came down the back of my ankle, right down the back of my ankle, the full weight, like, you know. And I remember I was in agony, and I tried to play on for about 2 minutes, and I had to come off, and we were due to play, and then me being stupid, like, I was never good with injuries, like, I always thought I could play through things, ankle was swollen for days.
I'm grand.
Yeah, so I just iced it. It was a quick turnaround to play Bowes. I think it was 4 or 5 days later. We're supposed to play them at Talca Park. We needed to win. If Bowes won the game, they won the league, you know. Remember doing a fitness test with Wes actually before the game, and he passed and I failed. I just couldn't turn at all. I knew there was something seriously wrong. Bowes won that was the night Bowes actually won the league. Bobby Ryan with the header. So that was the pretty much second last game of the season, third last game of the season. Season was over, like, you know. So I kind of went into the off season injured. But didn't know the extent of the injury, so I had a rehab sheet to go through. So I was going through this for about 4 or 5 weeks, and I wasn't getting any better. And this is in the break, you know. I was expecting to come back pre-season when everyone else was coming back
ready to go,
and I was still struggling. So we came back. I still couldn't join in. I was still going through, plyometrics and twists and turns, and I couldn't get myself up to a certain level at all. Two or three weeks into pre-season, we were supposed to be going to Spain and everything. And I said, Pat, this is not right. I said, I'm gonna get a second opinion, like, you know. So I rang, and it's funny that Barry should mention, I got on to Alan Bourne, and I did it myself now, and I said, can I come and see you, like, you know. So I went to see Alan Bourne. He sat me down, and this is brilliant. This is why Alan is brilliant, right? He said, tell me everything about the incident. So I told him, he went right back to the start, when it started, and he told me about the incident, whatever.
Kieran Martin falling.
We went through everything, and about 15 minutes in, he said, I think you fractured your ankle. I think you've got what's called a shepherd's fracture or something like that. Basically, what happens is a part of your talus bone shears off, and it's lodged in the joint, you know, and it, you know, there's a fracture there as well. But we'll send you for an MRI to confirm. So I got an MRI about 2 days later, confirmed everything. Everything just confirmed.
And he knew by you just telling him the story.
He just knew, but yeah, the man is like the Oracle from Matrix.
I've never had any dealings with him, but I've only heard good
since
things.
Since then, Alan's my doctor. I go to him with everything. You know, he's just an exceptional person. Like, you know,
we might get him in here some night.
Absolutely. I mean, even when Alan was voted for the PFA Merit Award, I remember I was one of the persons that would have put him forward for it. I think I can't remember the year Alan won it. but is totally deserving of that award. This man has touched nearly every player, and they'll all say he was amazing. Like they still bring their kids to see him. They still go to see him. Incredible person, and I'm not surprised to hear that he was the only one that
helped,
you know,
Barry.
Yeah, just that's him all over. Like, you know, an exceptional man. But yeah, so I missed preseason. I couldn't go to Spain with the team. Had to stay at home. I remember I was furious when I got a tall path straight away. Apparently, an X-ray would have brought it up. I never got the X-ray. So that was difficult. That went on for a while. Like, but I missed preseason and I missed the first half of the season. And I had to basically go through preseason myself. And that was, remember, I don't get injured too much. When I do, I drop weight. I don't eat when I'm not playing. And I came back halfway through that season. I was about 4 kilos underweight. I was like that. I was too thin. And I couldn't last more than 70 minutes in a game. Like, I had to be, I was playing and I had to put my hand up. I was gone. I'd had to be taken off. And it was this sort of process for about 4 or 5 weeks. And then I really got going, and this was kind of getting towards the business end of the season. I was playing really well for about 4, 5, 6 weeks, motoring, and then I hit another wall for some reason. Don't know why, maybe mental fatigue of the whole year that I would have had, like, you know. Got dropped for the Pats game, and I remember, you know, I didn't know whether I was going to play in the Bowls game.
You told us that, yeah.
And we went through it already. Pat put me back in, like, you know, and I scored and we won the game. And for that reason, that's the reason why I remember the goal, because it was such a difficult year personally for me. And I've never gone through a year like that, ever.
It's mad how that sticks out, that you people think would jump straight to, well, this league or that league or win the cup, but you're gone to, like, the toughest year you had. And then that moment of scoring the goal, it was almost like you went through all that year and that was... You were back then after all the stuff you'd gone through.
Yeah, because I would have gone, like, I Shells at the time was so, it was so competitive, Al, and you know, if I was out of the team for 2 or 3 weeks, I couldn't cope with that stuff. And in a way, it was a positive for me, and it's what got me through my career. But on this occasion, I couldn't do anything about it. So what I did do was I got myself ridiculously fit. To the point where I got too thin, you know, I remember I worked so hard. I was cycling to training at the time,
And then training.
It was to get every inch out of the whole thing. I couldn't. The only way I could cope with being injured was to just go. Was to almost become this manic. I just became obsessed. You know, and I couldn't get through the day without doing two or three sessions, like, you know. Couldn't cope with it at all. Like, I could cope with it now. But that was me when I was younger. I was probably would have been very, very obsessive back then. But
mad, I call it.
Yeah, it was pressure. Like, it was big pressure at the club. I mean, you know, I wanted to stay at Shells. I didn't want to lose out. I didn't want to go to anywhere else. Mm. You know, for me at the time, you left Shells at that time. That was it. Everywhere was downhill, you know.
I can vouch for that, Stu. Through adversity comes blessings. Remember that one, okay? Remember that one, people. So, yeah, Stu, it was an eventful weekend, a brilliant weekend, and the Shamrock Rovers fans are going to give me stick again. And the reason being, because I'm so cheerful about the fact that, not that they lost, I think it's just as good for the league that Pats won and Sligo won, because that's what we wanted. We've lauded Shamrock Rovers over the last number of weeks, and rightly so. They're a brilliant team. They're still at the top. But just in terms of the title race, we want to see some sort of a title race and be competitive. And I think it's good for them as well for it to be competitive.
I think they need it, Al.
Yeah, they do. They don't want to get lulled into it, this being too easy and rocking up and winning every week. So the game on Friday night, Dundalk 2, Shamrock Rovers 1, Stu. It's good for both. It's good for Dundalk as well. Badly needed. Badly, badly needed. But I think, to be fair to them, they've taken a lot of stick from us and from everyone over the weeks as well. And they rose to the challenge the other night.
Certainly did, yeah. Certainly did. Probably capitalised on probably... Rovers looked to me like they switched off for a couple of things, especially the McElhinney goal, who he took it exceptionally well.
But
for the life of me, I just couldn't understand.
From their corner.
Yeah, how we could literally break... I think they had Aaron Green on the edge of the box, which I know I don't know if when they originally break, the ball's going out to the left side and Aaron's going out to close down.
It was Daniel Kelly that broke.
Probably Daniel Kelly or whatever, whoever it was. And I think a more experienced
maybe a midfielder or some more defensive-minded player would have just retreated centrally right back and made sure the cover, make sure the goal was always covered. And they lost that cover. However, it doesn't explain why Patrick McElhinney and I think I can't remember who the other player was who broke completely.
Duffy.
And it was only Lopez was the only one to get close to McElhinney. So took their eye off the ball, just switched off, got caught cold. You have to give credit to Dundalk to break like that. And McElhinney, when he is eventually put in, Lopez has caught up with him and he's got back. Yeah, good physical strength to hold him off and bury the top corner, didn't he? So, you know, you would have expected Rovers to react well, which they did. Scored within a couple of minutes again.
To be fair to Shamrock Rovers on the night as well, Stu, like they were unlucky. Jim McGilton said it after a match. Now, they made six changes and his changes worked because Daniel Kelly caused havoc all night. And it's good to see Daniel back. He's been injured for the early part of the season. But it was a good decision because we've seen him play through the middle before and he's so pacey and direct, causes all sorts of problems. And I think it was a bit of a stroke from Jim the other night. Starting him, played well. To be fair to Shamrock Rovers, and I listened to Stephen Bradley after the match, they deserved probably more out of it, too. They hit the woodwork four times. Dundalk rode their luck a fair bit. They had one cleared off the line as well. But sometimes you get nights like that, and maybe their work ethic and their effort and what to put in earned them that bit of luck that they needed, Dundalk.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right to say that, you know, you just get nights like those just to get caught cold for the McElhinney goal. When you were on top, you're right, they said that they'd hit the crossbar and they were well on top. And then you look at the Daniel Kelly goal and it's come from,
it's a
stoppy pass from Andrew, but still there's cover there. There's five or six Rovers in on the cover and Kelly breaks away. We know he's got pace and once he's put him in, he's done very well. And Manus should have saved it, okay? But I think Manus is, you normally expect a player in that situation to go low and across the goalkeeper. And if you look at Manus, he gets himself low and he stays low. He gets his hands low and he's low, almost expecting to get down low to save and it's gone across him. But he struck it really well, Dan, and he struck it up, you know, and it's always gaining height. And it's one of them that can either go way over the bar or has ended up going to the roof.
I think there's fortune involved in it as well, Stu.
And he should have saved that, to be quite honest.
I don't even know if it's a shot. I think he's just hitting that hard across the goals and it's, as you says, it just took off maybe. But look, it was his birthday as well, Daniel Kelly. Happy birthday, Dan. But it was a big win for Dundalk. Whether it fixes things, I'm not so sure, Stu, but certainly they can take confidence from it and take heart from it. There was a protest outside the ground. The issues and problems are still not going away in terms of the off-the-field issues. And the quest still for a manager, I'm not sure what's going on or where it's at in terms of getting a new manager. And I still think they need a manager, Stu. They might leave it now till the break, I'd say.
They are certainly going to leave it till the break. There's no doubt about it. Like, you know, it's a decision they have to get right. They just have to get right.
And what about Jim McGuinness?
Yeah, well, I think there's plenty of people out there that deserve a look for that job, especially within this league. Paul Doolan, we were only talking about, certainly would be someone you would consider.
Pat?
You look at Pat Fennell. I don't think Pat Fennell would take it. I think he's happy enough out where he is, but maybe he could be convinced. But I'm sure there's a long, long list of contenders. That's a hell of a job, you know. It should be the best job in the country. It probably isn't now because, more than likely because I suppose some of the bad stuff has been exposed, hasn't it really? I think the club, from the supporters' point of view, I think they need almost to kind of embrace some sort of communication process. I think we need to hear an awful lot more from the owners. I think the fans are worried now, not just about the team and the manager. They're worried about the club, you know, because they're looking at everything else. We've had a hell of a year for nostalgia and looking back, and people, you're not going to pull the wool over people's eyes anymore.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because Sligo Rovers deserve huge credit, Stu. They unveiled master plan last week of the stadium plans. And I know Tommy Higgins. And funny, I met Tommy Higgins about 18 months ago for a coffee. And he had these plans then, right? And Tommy Higgins is the type of fella, Stu. And we mentioned earlier about the years in the league where you had fellas and not pay money and pulling strokes and all sorts that might have been going on. Tommy Higgins gets things done. So basically, when he tells he's going to do something, he has it in his head that he's going to do it and he will get it done.
He's like the equaliser, is he?
He's something like him, yeah. But no, he's a really good person, Tommy. And to be fair to all of them involved at Sligo Rovers, they're at a point now where they're delivering exactly what they're going to say, and they have ambitions and a structure and a plan in place. And I think it's brilliant. The plans they unveiled last week, Stu, for what they're trying to do with the club. And the ground is already in great nick, to be fair. Like, the Showgrounds is probably... The Showgrounds, Tallaght and Turner's Cross, for me, are the three best that we have. And now they want to better it and make it even better again.
Well, do you know what? I like the tactic. And the tactic here is to do your due diligence, okay? Do your work. Put together... a feasible plan, 2028. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's
given them plenty of time.
Put together the plans and a package, a PR package. And I've seen that. I come from an architectural background, so I know that an awful lot of work has gone into what we've seen in terms of the illustrations and the animated video of the ground. So that effectively, it's a finished business plan. And then start putting pressure on the government.
Well, to be fair, the reaction they got last week from all local politicians...
That's the way to do it.
...Northwestern, everyone's behind this. Yeah. And the thing about it with the politicians as well, so many have come out positively about it. There can't be anyone coming out negative now because they'd look like it.
And you have them on record as backing it. They were all... And that's it. Get them. Put them into a corner and make them... The problem we haven't done in the past is we just stood around moaning about this, going, "Oh, we need this and we need that," and
without actually
without actually doing any due diligence or doing any sort of a plan, it was always thrown back in our face. Well, get your act together. Well, now everyone's gotten their act together,
and that's the thing. And to be fair to Tommy, like, and he has great contacts. I'm sure he was a very successful businessman. This will be done, Stu. Like, this will come to pass because the people that are behind it, as you say, the structure and plan in place, they've ticked every box here in terms of the process and what you have to go through. And good luck to them. I think they deserve a whole lot of credit. And unfortunately for Dundalk, as much as we've lauded them over the years with all the success, look at the state of Oriel Park. Look at the state of it.
And no sign of any...
The pitch is a disgrace.
No sign of anything happening there at all. I mean, you know, I know there's been... It seems to me like the Peak 60 ownership, they've totally misunderstood Ireland. They totally misunderstood the game of soccer, to be quite honest with you. You know, and you only need to look at the European Super League stuff and what's happened there and the huge kickback from supporters. You know, we'll the people will let you take their game. They'll let you control their game to a point. And then they'll step back in and say, no.
Especially community clubs like that that mean so much to the area, like that, Dundalk.
Absolutely. Like, so I think the model we're seeing now is the model, Al. The clubs need to approach government or local politicians or, you know, national authorities with a plan, with something to show, and they just need to, that's the way they need to do it, and that's the way Dundalk need to do it. The Shamrock Rovers model is, you know, it's not the exact model, but that's the way that look how well that's worked out for Shamrock Rovers. South Dublin County Council, they're debt free, which meant the club can focus on the training ground and
investment in the squad. Yeah.
It's not rocket science.
Okay, the last one, Stu, before that, we need to get to our old mate Rob Hennessy, was at the heart of all sorts of carry on in Richmond Park the other night, and I looked back on these penalty incidents numerous times, right? And not one of them's a penalty.
Neither of them a penalty.
None of them. So you've...
The tackle's outside the box.
That's outside. You've Georgie Kelly in the first half, the free kick, and in Birmingham. And I always look at the player's reaction. It gives it away all the time. Yeah. Every player was stunned. Ian Birmingham himself was like... And I saw him, if you watch it back, Ian Birmingham goes over to Forrester on the edge of the box and he more or less says... It was like this. This was the way my arm was pointing, like this. And he never had it out. It was a terrible decision. The one, as you says, the late one for Bowes was outside the box. And then even the last one.
Mountney Shackle on
Burke. That was outside the box. Then the final one that he gave for Kieran Kelly.
Feely on Benson.
It was Kieran Kelly, actually.
Was it?
Yeah, the commentator said Feely. It was actually Kieran Kelly. 100% it was Kieran Kelly.
Yeah.
And he's up on... But he's not climbing all over him. He's just...
He's actually torn and he's kind of his shoulder's gone into the back of him.
None of them are penalties.
No, none of them are penalties. Like, and the one thing I'd say about Burt's one is that he's committed Mountney and he's had a right go at him. I'd be disappointed in Mountney because an experienced player like that, when you're getting near the box, don't do it. Mm. Just don't do it. Stand up. You're just giving the referee the opportunity to do it. But it's not. I don't know how the referee can see it from the angle he's at as well. He was quick. He was straight in with blowing the whistle. Never looked to his linesman. Not a penalty for me. And it's the old thing, isn't it? He's given the other one off the back of the fact that he's obviously given Pat the delay penalty because he's given Bowes the other one.
Yeah, it was dreadful. Now, it was a great result for Pat and obviously to win in that manner. But Bowes, I felt, were really unlucky. They played very well. Dawson Devoy, I know he scored the penalty, but he was magnificent in the game show. I watched it back. He was absolutely brilliant. He's my favourite player in the league. He's the next one to go away. Now, we had the announcement today, Mandrea was in the squad. Great news for the league. He's in the squad for the upcoming friendlies. And Jamie McGrath as well has been called in. Had a brilliant season with St Mirren. So it's great for those two. But I think Dawson Devoy is the next one to go away. He's magnificent player, Stu.
Yeah, no, we could see it last year when he was coming through as a kid. And he certainly looked, you know,
best player in the pitch today.
One of these players, I'm talking about last year, one of these players just look, he plays beyond his years, sort of thing.
Class.
You know, has a real maturity about him. And it was always very exciting to see how he was going to pick it up this year. Bowes obviously got off to a poor start this year, and it doesn't help, but we can start to see them. They're motoring.
They're having issues with the left-sided centre-half, because Kelly was at fault for the first goal, I felt, and even then he gives away, to be fair, he was unlucky for the penalty. But that's where it's letting them down at the moment, just defensively, because going forward they're playing some really good stuff, Bowes. And I know we've said this now the last 3 or 4 weeks. Ultimately, it's another defeat and a bit of pressure on Keith Long, but I genuinely feel they're not far away at all. But it was a huge win for Pats. Keeps the league title race, as we said, alive, which is what we want. Sligo Rovers kept it going as well. 2-0 winners over Longford. Figueira, Gibson scoring again. He's having a brilliant season. I'm heading to Tala tonight and I can't wait, Stu. I've me red and white knickers on, me red and white socks on, and I can't wait for the match. No, I am. I'm looking forward to the game. And they should go there in a lot of hope and a lot of confidence because they're playing quite well, Sligo Rovers. And they'll test Shamrock Rovers tonight.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you know, it's always a good. To be fair to Sligo, they kind of hit a bit of a wobble a couple of weeks ago. Could have went either way, and they've bounced back. They've gotten themselves back on the horse again. Yeah, and I think we're settled in now. I think we're looking at a 3-way run at it for the next for the foreseeable future. And
Do you think it will be the trade?
I think we're going to see this for the next couple of months. Mm. You know, Europe is coming now. It's going to break everything up, and you're going to see games getting put off or postponed, and focus switches towards Europe. But ultimately, Rovers, Pats, Sligo Rovers, they're the three that are going to be going head. You know, going at it for the next couple of months, and hopefully we get crowds back in, which makes it a huge thing. Then, you know,
well, could you imagine if there was crowds? Well, maybe not in Finn Harps because it would have been largely a local crowd. But could you imagine there was 200 away fans for Drogheda and Dane Massey steps up in the 94th minute,
a hell of a finish, wasn't it?
And buries it into the top corner and he's running out to Tim Clancy and the fans are jumping over the wall and they're getting on the pitch and hanging out of Dane Massey as well. Could you imagine those scenes?
This was bizarre, wasn't it? Because, Lean, I mean, once, you know, we've had the sending off, okay, which is probably was a sending off, a bit of a wild tackle, and Drogheda are saying, oh, listen, lads, let's just take the point. We're up in Finn Harps, bus journey home. No way, I'm not fucking going back on that bus journey that way, losing it. And they were, you know, it looked like Harps were settled to kind of put them under pressure, and they were under pressure until a loose ball from, you know, all the Harps players were kind of squeezed into that Drogheda box, weren't they? And then a loose ball, and who gets on the end of the loose ball? Jimmy Brown.
Oh, Jimmy.
Is it Jimmy or James, by the way?
James, but they call
James
him
Brown.
Energy.
And
like
if it had gone to anyone else in the pitch, it would have been pumped out of the ground. What's he do?
Run.
Takes it down and runs about 80 yards.
Like only Jimmy
like
Brown.
Unbelievable. Puts a shoot to Chris Lyons. Webster takes him down because he has to send off. Free kick, top corner.
Ah, brilliant.
Incredible. I have to give him credit. If I had like
he's been a revelation.
Yeah, amazing. He's just a joy to watch.
He is,
really.
Yeah.
It makes
so
you feel young.
Yeah.
Makes you feel young. He just does. Full of energy, doing all the right things. And if I was Clancy, I'd give him a big kiss at the end of the game because he's won them the game. He's won them the game,
yeah,
Alan.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Anyone else that's going in the stand. Yeah. You
no,
know?
I agree totally.
Incredible.
And to be fair to Tim and Kevin, they're doing a magnificent job. It was a huge win. Keeps them in that fourth place. They're playing Longford tonight, which you would fancy their chances. Obviously, Longford down near the bottom, as we know. So, Drogheda, if they were to pick up 3 points tonight, Stu, they've Derry on Friday. Very winnable games for them this week going into the break. It's a hell of a return so far for them to see them in fourth position. And long may it continue. The other game was Waterford 0, Derry City 1. Good win for Rory Higgins. Waterford still struggling. New manager going in there, Mark Burcham. We'll cover more of that over the next couple of weeks, but we'll see how he gets on. But there's a round of fixtures tonight. As I said, I'll be in Tala. Sligo Rovers and Shamrock Rovers, really looking forward to it. Drogheda at home to Longford, Waterford at home to Finn Harps, Bohemians versus Dundalk and Derry versus St Pat's. First division results, we were in Talca Park. Shelburne were very, very good, Stu, the 1-3-1. Ryan Brennan's having a great season. Cork City 1, Galway 1, Cabinteely 2, Treaty 1, Athlone 2, Cove 1 and Wexford Nil Bray 1. And in the Women's National League, Cork City 2, Treaty 3, Galway 3, Athlone 4, Bowes 0, Shelburne 1, DLR Waves 0, Piemont 2. That's episode 13, Stu. I enjoyed Barry Ryan. He's some character. I love Barry. And he was some keeper.
Yeah, no, it was great to hear him. And what's he up to now, is he?
Just working away now and he's happy.
Not involved
with
the game.
No, he's involved in the game. He'd be killing fellas if he was involved in the game now.
Might need a few of them in a few weeks.
So, Stu, that was episode 13. Paul Morris, thanks a million as always. Fair play to you. Benetti Menswear, thank you for the sponsorship as always and looking after us and supporting us. Stewie, it's been a pleasure. Thank you. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Al, yeah.
Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.